Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're recording from the Veterans Service Building at the State Capitol for the dedication of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute. Joining me now is Terry Popp, who is president of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute, which has just been completed at the State Capitol Mall in St. Paul. And we're on the fifth floor of the Veterans Service Building on the day of the dedication, and we're overlooking the entire mall. And Mrs. Popp, looks like you did a terrific job on this project.
Oh, thank you very much. But it wasn't just me. It was myself and many, many, many volunteers.
As I know, I've been privy to all of the emails and all of the work. You've been at this for how long?
I've been working on this for 4 years, and my husband, Bill, has been working on it for more than 6 years.
It's a big project with a big budget, but can you describe for our listeners what is the Minnesota Military Family Tribute?
The Minnesota Military Family Tribute is built on the Minnesota State Capitol Mall, and it was built in order to thank and honor all of our military families who have people that have served in the military either in the past, are in the military now, or will be serving in the future. So it honors military families.
And of course, that's a common theme that I've heard from your husband for as long as I've known him, because we're on the board together at the Minnesota Military Family Foundation, but we won't get into that today. But for our listeners all around the state, can you describe the family tribute? It's a walkway, and it's got three essential parts. Can you tell us about it, please?
Correct. Thank you, Tom. Yes, it does consist of three elements. First is the Thank You Military and Veteran Family Walkway, and that's lined with red autumn maples. It has an accent color of red in the spring from berries, and in the fall it'll blaze in a bright red color. Beautiful trees along the archway. Benches say thank you to our military and veterans along eight different benches along the walkway. That walkway arches and basically supports the other military memorials that are sitting on the Capitol grounds. The other two elements, of course, is the Gold Star table, and that honors our Gold Star families who've lost a loved one in a conflict. The Gold Star table is absolutely gorgeous. It has constellations etched into the top of the table. That's because our military members always say with their families that they share a night sky, and that's something that they have in common when they're writing home to each other or when they're thinking about each other. They can always look up at the night sky with the North Star in the center of the table, accenting the table because we are, of course, the North Star state. It'll be lit from the bottom, and the stars will actually sparkle at night. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it's a very moving, wonderful bronze table standing on a pedestal, absolutely handicap accessible so that all of our military members and our Gold Star families can assess it all year round. The last element is the story stones, and the story stones are 87 stones, one for each county in the state of Minnesota, and they have stories etched into them that come from correspondence that was either written by a military service person or it was written by a family member back and forth, what they sent to each other. It's about common everyday themes. So if fishing was important to a family, that's mentioned. We have, you know, what types of food they wanted to eat, or, you know, other things that were important or are important to military families. Those actually are represented from 1864 all the way through to 2014, and every county is represented.
For our listeners, we're at once again at the Veterans Service Building at the State Capitol, and the mall is between the State Capitol Building and the Veterans Service Building, and it's a big park-like area. If you haven't been here, I encourage you to come to St. Paul and allocate an extra hour or so and come on down. But the walkway, the Minnesota Military Family Tribute, runs roughly east to west, and on the west side you'll see the Gold Star table. And then there's a tree-lined walkway that goes all the way over to the east. And on the east side, there's all of these stones that Mrs. Popp just described. And it's when these trees get a little bigger, it's going to be just fabulous, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Even now, when we put the trees in last fall and they turned red, it was just spectacular. If you go to our webpage at www.militaryfamilytribute.org, in our gallery section, we have photos that you can see from last fall where the trees were just blazing red, and it's just spectacular.
We're speaking with Terry Popp, the president of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute, from the Veterans Service Building in St. Paul for the dedication of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute. Now, Terry, you've got a big ceremony this morning. Can you tell us what all is going to happen?
Oh, yes. We have a formal program that's going on in the morning, 11 speakers total, and then we also have entertainment. We have a song that was written just specifically for this occasion, and that'll be performed by the Lost Wheels. They wrote it for the dedication ceremony, specifically for the military family tribute. Some of our speakers include my husband, Bill, who will thank the military families, Mary Niemeyer, who is a past president of the tribute, Paul Douglas and his wife, Lori Kurhofer, representing Blue Star families, Diana and Jim Beardsley representing Gold Star families. We have retired Major General Larry Shelato, who's also currently the commissioner of the Department of Veterans Affairs, speaking on behalf of veterans in thanking military families. We have former Governor Tim Pawlenty and Mrs. Mary Pawlenty, who were very involved when they were in the governor's office as far as supporting military and military families in particular. General Richard C. Nash, who's the current Adjutant General of the Minnesota State National Guard. We also have General Joe Votel and his wife Michelle Votel. He's the Commanding General of the U.S. Special Operations Command. Congressman Eric Paulson will be here. Senator Amy Klobuchar will be speaking, and Governor Mark Dayton will be present this afternoon too.
That's quite a lineup.
Yes, it is. We also have performances by Rocky Lynn. He's a country star, and he does a lot of songs, written a lot of songs specifically for military families. And then later on in the afternoon, we have entertainment that's going to be both Rocky Lynn and the Steels, kind of a local legend in our market. Geraldine Steele is actually going to be singing the national anthem for us. She does just a spectacular job of singing the national anthem.
Should be a wonderful morning. All we need is a little bit of sunshine, and we'll be off to the races.
Yeah, actually, a little bit of cloud cover is nice because it's, as Bill calls it, natural sunscreen, which is good for us. Less natural sunscreen might be good.
A little bit less. It'll get better. We'll talk to the chaplain. Now, Terry, this has been quite a project, as most people probably don't know, but before you can do something like this at the mall, there's a lot of people have to say yes.
Yes, actually, it took Bill and Mary Niemeyer, who was past president, about 2 years to go through the process to get this approved to be built on the state capitol. There was a major competition for architects in order to submit a draft of what could be put onto the mall. We had anticipated that it might just be a table at the beginning and just a smaller area of the Capitol grounds, but HGA architects and landscape artists came in and they submitted a proposal that was fabulous and designed this incredibly beautiful and moving and extremely large tribute. So they did just a wonderful job. They won the submittal, and that started us off and running. They won that 5 years ago, and we started the fundraising process 4 years ago.
And then, Terry, I remember about a year and a half ago, you had to go out for bids, and that process didn't start off as fast as we could, but we found some minority contractors to help with the bidding process, and they've been working on this for the last year, haven't they?
Oh, yes. This has been wonderful. All of the funds raised were privately raised. We had five founding partner corporations that came in and set the basis for it. All the rest of it was raised by donations from many, many, many individuals, foundations. It's just been a fabulous process of going through, but it is time-consuming. It took 3 years just on the fundraising portion itself, and they will not start building on the Capitol Mall until all the funds have been raised are in place. We raised over, in the end, $1.2 million in order to build this on the Capitol.
And not only did you have to pay for the project, but you had to provide some maintenance funds going forward.
That is correct. 20% of the funds have to be held in escrow for maintenance of it during the course of the years, because this will be on the Capitol Mall forever.
Terry, it's certainly got to feel good to look at it from the fifth floor of the Veterans Service Building and see it from up here, and it's finally here, and it's done. They placed the table last week, and you've got to feel really good about this.
Oh, we feel just absolutely wonderful about everything that has happened. It's just, it's moving, it's beautiful. You can walk through the stones and read the stones. I watch people walk through it every day that I've come out to the Capitol, and you'll see somebody notice that there's writing on one of the stones, and they'll kind of get pulled into it, and then they'll realize there's writing on all of the stones. I watched one woman walk through the story stones, and she read absolutely every stone in the complex, which is 87 different stones, so 87 different stories.
That must have taken her a while to do that.
She was here for quite a while. She was here when I got to the story stone site, and she was still there when I left, and I was here for about an hour, so she was working her way through it.
Terry, we're just about out of time for this segment. Have you got anything special you'd like to say to our military families?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We cannot thank our military families enough. They are the support of our entire military for their service members. So this is the first of its kind in the nation in thanking military families, and it's the least that we can do for them. Really, military families ask for so little. Just a thank you. They're just the backbone and core of our country.
Of course, we always think about the military that are deployed and serve in the United States military, and they sacrifice and they go. But while they go, their families sacrifice as well. And you and your family, Mr. Pop, and the Minnesota Military Family Foundation, and now the Minnesota Military Family Tribute, have spent over a decade trying to take care of those families, and I think you've done a fabulous job.
Thank you very much, Tom, and thank you very much for having us on the air and for covering the building of the Military Family Tribute.
It's our pleasure, and thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
That was Terry Pop, the president of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute, talking to her from the Veterans Service Building in St. Paul on the occasion of the dedication of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute. Please stay with us. Coming up, we'll talk to Commissioner Larry Shelletoe of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we're recording today from the fifth floor of the Veterans Service Building on the State Capitol Mall for the dedication ceremony of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute. And my guest this segment is a frequent guest on the show. It's Commissioner Larry Shelletoe, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and formerly the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard. And Commissioner, we don't talk about that a lot because you're so busy as the Commissioner now, but you served as the Adjutant General for 7 years?
That's correct. 7-year appointment.
And, Commissioner, your office is in the Veterans Service Building, so over the course of the last year, you've watched a construction project, haven't you?
You know, I've been fortunate because as we're up here on the fifth floor, you get the best view of the campus, if you will, of the Capitol. And you could just see the evolution, and periodically we'd come up and take pictures. And while I didn't quite get it done, but I'd love to see those photos where they keep showing that development and things, and right now it is looking absolutely beautiful.
It turned out incredible. I've tried to describe it to the visitors. It's on the mall at the State Capitol between the Veterans Service Building and the Capitol Building. It's a park-like area with a lot of different tributes and things, but it runs roughly east to west, and on the east side there's a Gold Star table, and on the west side there's some story stones.
Yes.
One for each county in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah. And the beauty of it is, if you look at the walkways and the Veterans Service Building, what I like about it in symbology, and we're fortunate to be on the fifth floor, is it's like open arms embracing the Capitol.
Very good, sir.
Because it's the military that made sure that our government still exists.
Commissioner, we've talked about this on the show before, too. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and you were a young lieutenant in combat in Vietnam, and back in those days, I can remember when I went into the Air Force, there were deferments for people going to college and deferments for some people that were married. And I can remember at basic training that the drill instructor, somebody asked a question about a wife, and he said, if we'd have wanted you to have a wife, we'd have issued you one.
Yes.
But that was those days, and in Vietnam it was mostly guys that went to Vietnam, except for the nurses and some other folks that were there to take care of us. And things have evolved a great deal in the last 45 years, and now most of the service members are married, aren't they?
That is correct. A lot of them are, and but also I think it's important. You know, they are married. They're accommodating and so forth. And from our last deployments and so forth, that added a whole new dynamic. And I know you're going to have General Nash on later, but the whole Yellow Ribbon program, the family network, Family Tribute, the Family Foundation, all of those things were critical because in our generation, if I had been married, I wouldn't have been 10 days after I graduated from college, I was in uniform. The irony of that started about 6 months earlier when I was applying for a job, management training, and everything was going well. And I'll never forget when the CEO said, there's just one last question. Okay, what's that? Where are you with the draft board? I says, no, I'll go and find out. So I went down to the draft board, and I said, I'm going to be graduating around the 1st of June, so I just kind of want to know what my status. And I don't know if you remember those big IBM printouts, but they had one on the desk, and they flipped through it, found my name, went across. I'll never forget that. It's one of those significant emotional events. You can expect your notice in either April or May.
Well, there was a shocker, sir.
Well, I know everything that I had planned, I had it all laid out, dissipated. It was gone.
Upside down.
I didn't get the job, all of that, and it was no longer whatever. So 10 days, as I said, all right, I have a choice now. Either I wait and get drafted, or let's get it over with. So I went down, and I volunteered to go into the officer training program. I said, if I have to go, I might as well get some additional training or something. And hopefully the war would be over by then, too, by the time I graduated. Neither happened, but I got in the commission, and the rest is history. Came back home, started a whole new career, something I thought I would never do, and life's been good.
Spent how many years in the military, sir? 42 years, I think.
42 or something like that. But the beauty of this deal, and I've been watching it, and I'm a study of human nature, and if you look at the story stones, the 87 counties submitted quotes from veterans from previous wars and so forth. But as I watched, I'm a people watcher, and as I watched the people walking through that, they're silent and they're focused, because the quotes on there are something I'm sure they heard at their kitchen table. I mean, it's so simple in many ways that it is powerful, extremely powerful. I'm just amazed at how the number of people are just fascinated with that.
And linger and yes. And look at the story stones.
Yeah, and then the last part to be put into place was the table. And what I'm finding very interesting about that is the education that's going on, because it is the hemisphere, the lights and all of this, but also just the concept of the Gold Star family is there. So that whole walkway is absolutely beautiful, but it embraces all the monuments, our Vietnam Memorial over here, and to the Korean Memorial over here, the World War II in the center, and it has become a very, very powerful and very well-visited memorial to our veterans.
We're speaking with Commissioner Larry Shalito from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs from the Veterans Service Building in the State Capitol Mall on the occasion of the dedication of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute on Minnesota Military Radio. Commissioner, as you know, a lot of our listeners may not be aware, but the Gold Star families are families who have lost a loved one in military service to our country. And last fall, you helped with a Gold Star family retreat up at Craigens Resort. And we came up there and interviewed some volunteers. We actually interviewed about eight families. And on July 4th weekend, we're going to have a very special show, Minnesota Military Radio. We took a number of those interviews, and we're going to put them out all together on that show for July 4th weekend. And then in September, we saved a couple of those interviews because you've got another Gold Star family retreat coming up on the first weekend in October back up at Craigens. That's a very important event to you, isn't it?
Well, it'll be probably, I think it's going to be our eighth event. Obviously, the most difficult part of my job as Adjutant General was presenting the flag at the funeral to the the family. Yes, unfortunately. And as it's gone, the bond of trust, a Gold Star family talking to another Gold Star family, there's a bond of trust and so forth. So we bring them together. We have the counselors, but they were getting to know each other. And then as the years, and the most beautiful thing I saw last year in our seventh year was those that had been there for every year. I would call my veterans of that retreat, if that's a proper way to do it. Or we're mentoring the younger ones.
And tell them it was all right to trust and share.
Trust and share, and also what we noticed, too, more recently, was the number of young families with the young kids. And I can understand back in Vietnam why marriage was a deferment, because it impacts so many other people. And what we were seeing with that retreat is now the younger ones are coming in, but they are starting to bond and network and so forth. And I just believe it's the right thing to do, and we're going to do it, and we've been very, very fortunate with our state legislature and leadership to make sure that we can continue to do that.
And there'll be some Gold Star families here today, and you've talked to some of them. How do they feel about this way in this memorial?
They do. They're very honored to have it. It's sometimes in the whole process of healing is you have to kind of reopen and then bring it back. But I think the big question for a lot of people is, you know, does anyone really care? And this will definitely be part of that healing process, and also it'll be a continual reminder that no one's forgetting the sacrifices that their
loved ones made.
Yeah. Yeah, if I may, you know, when they dedicated the World War II Memorial about 7-8 years ago, I was upstairs on the fourth floor, and I'm often here on weekends, and I was amazed because I could look out there for that right after the dedication for the first 6 months. Never once did I look out there that I did not see a three-generation gathering. Grandpa, the kids, and the grandkids.
So now it's a place of remembrance.
Yeah, that's correct.
Which is a great thing.
Yes.
Commissioner, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, I just, if you ever have the opportunity, do take the time and dedicate some time. And it's not a quick 15-minute walk by. It is time that go and take a look at the at these, because especially the story stones and the Gold Stars table, they're very, very powerful. But the whole complex. And then, honestly, if you have a veteran in the family, just quietly go up and give them a hug.
Well, thank you for joining us once again on Minnesota Military Radio, and look forward to seeing you today at the dedication ceremonies.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
That was Commissioner Larry Shelito from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs from the fifth floor of the Veterans Service Building on the occasion of the dedication of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute. Please stay with us. Coming up next, we'll talk to General Joseph Votel on Minnesota Military Radio.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we're recording today from the Veterans Service Building in St. Paul, Minnesota, for the, on the occasion of the dedication of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute. And we'd invite all of our listeners to, the next time you come to St. Paul, make a point of allocating some extra time and come down and look at these this fabulous Minnesota Military Family Tribute, because it's quite a sight to see. Joining me now is General Joseph Votel, who became the 10th commander of the U.S. Special Operations Command, headquartered at MacDill Air Force Base, Tampa, Florida, on August 28, 2014. U.S. Special Operations Command is one of the 9 combatant commands within the Department of Defense Unified Command Structure. General, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Tom, thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Sir, we had you on the show, I think, around July 4th, 2 years ago, and at that time you were a lieutenant general, and you were from, you're a St. Paul native. A couple of things have changed in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's been, I finished up my my assignment at Fort Bragg here about a year or so ago, and then I had the good fortune to be nominated to go down and take command of the United States Special Operations Command, so we did that last year, and of course it's, you know, just been a, continue to be a great opportunity to serve, so.
And, sir, in the process, you got promoted to general, 4-star general.
Yeah. Amazing.
Congratulations, sir.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
It's always good to see someone from Minnesota go to the top ranks.
Good. Well, thanks for that.
Sir, can you tell us just a little bit about your current command?
Well, as you mentioned here, the United States Special Operations Command is one of the 9 combatant commands that essentially conduct our military operations globally. And in that capacity, I lead about 70,000 special operations forces from the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. And we support our geographic combatant commanders and conduct operations and other activities out there to support our national security objectives globally. So it's a great opportunity for me to really pay back to the community that I've served in here, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity every day just to serve with these great young Americans.
General, I think the last time you were on the show, we were talking about how things have changed since September 11, 2001, and how they've combined the special forces, and now you're at the top and in command of 70,000 troops. There must be people deployed at all times.
Yeah, there are. On a day-to-day basis, we have about 8,000 of our forces that are deployed in about 90 different countries around the world on a day-to-day basis, and we maintain that that level of commitment day in, day out, year in, year out. So it's very important for us to be out there and working with our partners and supporting our other military partners out there as we kind of pursue these objectives that our nation has.
In general, I would imagine that there's a wide range of timing on those deployments, for especially for your troops. Some of them might be short-term deployments, some longer-term.
Right, yeah. So we send some that we what we call temporary duty. They just go, maybe they go out for days or weeks. But the typical deployments these days are about 6 months. One of the things we've learned over the last 14 years is that we do have to have a pretty rigorous process to manage our deployments because it does have an impact on our people, and more importantly, it has an impact on our families. And one of the things that we really strive to do is create some predictability with our families. And so by having regular, by having a deployment schedule, excuse me, that allows that really helps us do that.
So, sir, I would guess that if you've got troops out for a six-month deployment, that when they come back, they've got a period of time where they have to rest up and retrain and get reacquainted with their family and before right. You can send them back out.
Right. Yeah. Well, we try to maintain like a 1-to-2 ratio here. So if they're going to be gone for 6 months, we want to have them back for at least twice that amount of time, a year before we send them out. And that gives us an opportunity to take care of them, take care of their families, make sure they've got the training and all the other skill development they need before we send them back out.
So that means that you spend a lot of time making sure that your troops are rested and retrained and ready to go. But by the same token, when they're gone for those 6 months, their family sacrifices as well.
Absolutely, they sure do. And you know that's certainly one thing that we have learned is that the families serve as well. And so part of our job has always got to be about making sure that we keep making our families resilient and self-reliant, and we are giving them the information and the support that they need while their service members are serving the country.
In general, that process has evolved tremendously over the last 40 or 50 years because there's a lot of resources available for the families, a lot of support groups, a lot of resources that they can reach out to if they need something when their loved one is deployed.
You're absolutely right. I think my experience is probably the same as yours. When I came in the Army, I mean they cared about families, but it was not as embraced at that time, and I think we did not completely recognize the value that families brought to our formation and our need to take care of them, and we have become better over the last 35 years of my service.
We're speaking with General Joseph Votel, who is the 10th commander of the U.S. Special Operations Command, on Minnesota Military Radio on the occasion of the dedication ceremony of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute at the state capitol in St. Paul. General, I know you're going to speak today at this event. How do you feel about the Minnesota Military Family Tribute? We're up here on the fifth floor of the Veterans Service Building. It's pretty tremendous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's wonderful. I had an opportunity to come down and take a look at it yesterday, and I'm just so impressed with how the state of Minnesota and all the community here has really gathered around to create this great tribute to not only our military families, as we're going to dedicate the memorial today, but really to all of our other veterans and service members who have served from Minnesota, who have served the nation so well for so long.
General, here in the state capitol mall, it kind of ties in. We've got the Vietnam Memorial, we've got the Korean Memorial, we've got all of these other memorials on the capitol, and now tying it all together these hands of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute, saluting the Gold Star families on one end and the Story Stones with the counties on the other end. Seems to fit in quite nicely.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful tribute, and I think it is. It certainly doesn't surprise me that the state of Minnesota and all the great supporters up here recognize the value of military families. And I think it's an important acknowledgement to make, and it's really great to be here to be part of it today.
General, it's great that you have an opportunity to come back to your home state and participate in an event like this. I know you're going to have a message for our listeners today. Is there anything special you're going to tell them about these memorials and the mall and the importance of this area?
Well, I'm going to tell. I think as we've all continue to do, we have to continue to remember everyone deployed. I know that's one of the themes that will come out today of all the speakers that we'll have here today. But more importantly, that there are families that serve and support all of those who also serve, and they are as important to our overall readiness of our force as any. any other weapon system we might have. We recognize that a strong, resilient family and being able to take care of them while their service members are deployed really is a combat multiplier for us and really allows our service members to do the jobs that they're being asked to do. So I think this just underscores the importance of it here.
Sir, you're in charge of some of what can arguably be the most important troops in the military today, 70,000 Special Operations Forces. What kind of shape are our troops in, and what's their morale, and how are the families?
I think we're doing well. You know, we've been engaged for a long time now, at least in the special operations community for 14 continuous years, and we've learned a lot through that process. We've learned how we have to take care of our people better. We've learned how we've had to take care of our families better, and we've really put a lot of emphasis on getting the resources in place to do that. Whether it's family life counseling, counselors or other social workers or other things we've been able to introduce into our formations, those types of things have really helped us address problems and build resiliency into our service members and their families. So the state of where we are is quite good. I think we continue to draw exceptional young people into the military. I'm incredibly impressed with them. Every time I have an opportunity to talk with them, their motivation is so good, and they think so much about our country. And then when you meet the families that that are supporting them, then you get to understand where their values come from, and they just continue to serve us so well. So I think we're doing good with all of that.
General, last time we had you on, you told me that special forces today are working closer than ever with the regular troops because you visit them at their bases, you're stationed out of their bases, you're working closer with them than maybe ever before. Is that still true?
That's absolutely true. We don't really do anything by ourselves. We always operate with partners, and our conventional military force partners are really the critical people that we work with on a day-to-day basis. And so what we try to do is we try to take our unique skills and capabilities and combine them with those of our general purpose forces, and I think that provides a great unifying effort for our commanders out there to accomplish the tasks that they've had. So we are part of a team. We want to be part of a team. We're glad to work with all of our partners out there.
Sir, it seems like you live and work and operate in a whole different world within the military and the special forces. How important is it for you to maintain your roots and come back to Minnesota once in a while?
It's extraordinarily important, Tom, and it's always it's a great opportunity to always come back here to St. Paul and back to the state and see our friends and family and just be reminded of the great place that this is, and it's wonderful. We enjoy it. We keep a home here in St. Paul, so we hope to always come back, and we just love the people and love the environment back here, and we're just glad to be back.
General, any final thoughts for our listeners today?
Well, no, I would do the same thing that you did. I would encourage everyone to take an opportunity the next time they're in St. Paul to get down here and see this wonderful tribute to our military families and to all of our veterans. And as you pointed out, all of this consolidated in one area makes a very unique opportunity to visit and recognize the service of not only our military members but of our family members. Thanks, Tom.
General, I want to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio on the occasion of the dedication of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be back.
That was General Joseph Votel, the 10th Commander of the U.S. Special Operations Command from the state capitol. Please stay with us. We'll be joined in a moment by Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We're recording today from the state capitol, from the Veterans Service Building, on the occasion of the dedication of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute. And joining me now is Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be back with you.
Sir, we just had a show on last weekend where we talked about diversity in the force and all of the things that have changed in the first 4.5, 5 years of your tenure as the Adjutant General. You had a lot of priorities when you started out, and are things on track, sir?
They are, Tom. We're certainly very proud of the progress we've made in my tenure as the Adjutant General. As you mentioned, I came in with 6 priorities for our organization, And we're succeeding in those six priorities, and the entire force has embraced those. And as we discussed last week in your program, the diversity and inclusion initiative that we have has made great progress in the last 4 years in all the measurables that we have. And so we're very proud of that, and we've shared that with my fellow commissioners and the governor, because he obviously has a very high interest in diversifying the workforce in Minnesota as well as in state government. So we're very proud of the progress we've made in the area of diversity and inclusion within the Minnesota Army and Air National Guard.
In general, the Minnesota National Guard, since 9/11/2001, you've had thousands and thousands of airmen and soldiers deployed all around the world. So you've really been on kind of a war footing for 14 years, haven't you?
We have, Tom. Yeah, I believe we're somewhere over 26,000 individual deployments among our Army and Air National Guard, and that's a pretty phenomenal number considering we're slightly less than a 14,000 person force in Minnesota. So obviously many of these individuals have deployed multiple times around the globe.
In general, we've talked before, there can't be a single Minnesota National Guard soldier or airman that doesn't know that when they join, when they sign up or they reenlist in the Minnesota National Guard, they're likely to be deployed sometime.
You're correct, Tom. That's certainly no secret. And I think your listeners would be very surprised by the fact that a lot of our soldiers and airmen are seeking a deployment. They just want to serve their nation. And that's one of the impediments that we see now in the reenlistment rate, is that individuals don't see that they have an opportunity to deploy in the numbers that we have since 9/11. Currently, we have somewhere a little less than 100 deployed around the globe, primarily right now in the Sinai with the mission that's going on there. And we also have individuals that are preparing to deploy our aviation support battalion back into the Middle East. So they're at their MOPE station as we speak, and they will be deploying in the next couple of weeks. So missions continue, and obviously, as your listeners are well aware, our world is probably less safe than it was right after 9/11 with all the instances that are going around in any particular country in the world.
General, I've just interviewed some of the soldiers that came back with the 34th Cab. They just came back from Kuwait, and it's interesting to note that they know that they have to deploy. They know that it's a sacrifice. They do everything possible to make sure their family is taken care of while they're gone. But they tell me that when they're over there, they get into a routine. They focus on the mission. They get up at a certain time of day. They go to bed at a certain time of day. They have chow. They do their work. They do their missions. That portion of it, the living portion of it, and doing the missions is relatively easy, as opposed to your families back here have everything to deal with, the schools and education and hospitals and all of these things. And you spent a great deal of time during your tenure as Adjutant General building the Yellow Ribbon Network to support those families so that they can be taken care of, so that your soldiers and airmen can focus on the mission.
You're absolutely correct. You know, when I mentioned the 26,000-28,000 individual deployments, that's of soldiers and airmen. You might also consider that we've deployed, even though they stayed in the home front, that many families. And it certainly has had an impact over those number of years, as well as the multiple deployments. You know, in the past, whether it was in the Vietnam era or even before that with the World War II era, you know, they deployed with a set time. You know, obviously World War II was to the end of the conflict. In your era, in Vietnam, we didn't have multiple deployments unless it was on a volunteer basis. Typically, at that time, most people were drafted. They had a two-year enlistment, and a year in Vietnam, came home, and they went about their business. Now our soldiers and airmen come back, and they get reset, reunited with their families, and then we mobilize them again in 2 to 3 years for someplace else around the globe. And so that impact it has on the family and their children is pretty tough to deal with. And our Yellow Ribbon program that started here in Minnesota under the initiative of Commissioner Shelato and Governor Pawlenty, and at that time Senator Dayton, finding funds to do that, and it's continuing today with the great support we have from our congressional delegation. That program that started here has gone national, and now it's a fully supported program by the Department of Defense for all service members, and so we're pretty proud of that. And I think because of the Yellow Ribbon Program in Minnesota, acknowledging the hardships of our families, the support organizations, over 220 communities or organizations, companies, regions, counties have really stepped up to support the efforts that we've had in the conflict since 9/11.
It's been a great job, sir, and we have a lot of those folks on the radio program. Almost every week seems like we're talking about another program that helps take care of the families so that your soldiers and airmen can pay attention to their duties.
But you're right, Tom. The Yellow Ribbon Program, and I think your listeners ought to be reminded of that, is for all service members, whether it's Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, Coast Guardsmen, reserve component and active who serve in Minnesota or outside of our boundaries. It's for all their families. It's just not a National Guard program. And so I think we have to remind the listeners of that, that this program is open for all families that have service members.
We're speaking with Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash, from the Veterans Service Building in St. Paul on the occasion of the dedication of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute. Sir, the Minnesota Military Family Tribute, you've been watching this thing be built over the course of the last year. How do you feel about being involved in that?
Well, Tom, it was certainly an exciting tribute here on the grounds of the state capitol. And I was fortunate enough, I was here at the day of the groundbreaking with the committee and Bill and Terry Popp and all of his support organizations that designed it and really the brainchild of Bill. But I also had the opportunity, because it's right outside my office window, and I was able to see the day-by-day construction that was going on. And it's a large tribute, I think, for your listeners when they have an opportunity to visit the Capitol Complex to come down and spend time, because it's probably the most expansive tribute that's on the Capitol grounds, and it really embraces all the other monuments that are here in the memorials to the Korean War, the World War II, the Vietnam era. And it sort of wraps its arms around that and is really here symbolizing the support of families for their service members of all eras.
And it really kind of ties them all and all the rest of the memorials together, doesn't it, sir?
It does. And as you look at the, if you step back and look at the tribute, as I have told individuals, it's sort of embraces the other memorials to the conflicts, but it's also at the base of those. So it's sort of the foundation, just like our families are the foundation of our service members.
General, we just got a couple minutes left. This is a beautiful Minnesota Military Family Tribute. I hope we're going to have some good weather for your speech today, along with several others. But before we sign off today, what kind of shape are Minnesota National Guard soldiers and airmen in today, and how are the families?
Well, I think the families obviously are relieved that we're not deploying soldiers at the rate we were over the since 9/11. At one point in our previous programs years ago, we had over 4,000 deployed at any one time. And as I mentioned, we're less than 100. And that's of today. And the world situation changes, and we're prepared to execute our missions. Currently, we have our brigade combat team is up at Camp Ripley going through an exportable combat training center scenario started this month and will go through August in preparation for their deployment to National Training Center next year in California. And so that's sort of the world series of the homeland training for a brigade combat team. So we're always preparing to train, because we never know when the President of the United States or our nation needs to have the Guard again to defend our nation.
So, as usual, you're preparing to maintain the highest readiness status possible so that when you're called upon, you're ready to do your jobs.
Absolutely. I would mention to your listeners that our 34th Division, headquartered here in Minnesota, our brigade combat team, the 1st Brigade of the 34th, and our 34th Combat Aviation Brigade, as you mentioned, just returned from Kuwait, by all measurable standards of their peers in the National Guard in the United States, are rated number one.
General, just a few seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners today about the Minnesota Military Family Tribute?
Well, again, I would encourage those that are not able to make it today for the dedication of this beautiful memorial to our families, that sometime this summer they have an opportunity to come down and visit the boulders that represent every one of our counties. The 87 boulders that are here are inscribed with a phrase or a saying from a letter going all the way back to the Civil War to our current conflicts. Some are humorous. Others will tug at your heart.
General, thank you for joining us again today. That was Major General Rick Nash, the Minnesota's Adjutant General from the Minnesota State Capitol, the Veterans Service Building, for the dedication of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute. We're just about out of time. I'd encourage all of our listeners, when you get a chance to come to the State Capitol next, schedule an extra 30 minutes and stop by the mall and take a close look at the Minnesota Military Family Tribute. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Terry and Bill Popp, Commissioner Larry Shelito of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, General Joseph Votel, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk to Congressman Tim Walz and find out about the Veterans Career Fair with Jim Finley. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at minnesotamilitaryradio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at minnesotamilitaryradio.com.